CIO Talk Radio is brought to you by HP Workplace Services. Are you an instant-on enterprise?
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is Rethinking the 80-20 Rule. And our guest for today's show is John Walton, who's the CIO of the City and County of San Francisco, California. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well out here on the West Coast. A little foggy, but hopefully it'll turn out to be a nice day.
So you're working a whole lot more than in your previous days and years, or you're having some fun lately?
Oh, it's always fun. I actually really enjoy working, so I do consider work fun.
Okay, so the city and county of San Francisco is truly lucky to have you as a leader who is helping them lead IT. So how's life and work there?
It's great. You know, we obviously, you know, have our budget challenges germane to this conversation. We, over the last few years, we've had budget shortfalls here in the city and county. We have about a $6.8 billion annual budget citywide for all services we provide. And unfortunately, we've had in the neighborhood of $300 to $500 million in shortfalls every year in our general fund revenue. So it's been a challenging time. It's a time of challenges and opportunities to try to figure out how to make things better while our budgets are decreasing.
Now, when it comes to the very budgeting, do you think it is still an art, or you have been able to, or your the people, other decision makers, have really been able to convert that into a science?
Well, I think it's both an art and a science. I think most importantly, my observation is it's got to be a partnership. For IT to be successful, and for most departments in government to be successful, it's really tough to go it alone through a budget process and have a meaningful conversation with the folks that make the policy decisions, the budget decisions at the highest level in the organization. So you have to create a forum where the budget discussion is a partnership, not only among your internal staff, but with your external stakeholders and agencies about what are you trying to achieve. And it really having a plan, a strategy about how you're going to meet budget shortfalls and at the same time continue to support your operations and make things better and you know, achieve some level of innovation and improvement at the same time. So I think it's an art in the sense that sometimes it takes some artistic ability to paint a picture of where you're going and some faith to jump off that cliff and to take some risks. But it is a science, and I think you have to make it as transparent a process as possible. I think the old days of how the perception of how government worked with a lot of backroom deals is dead. I think a lot of it's got to be done in public hearings. People have to be very aware of the decisions that are being made, where the shortfalls are, and how you're going to balance the budget. And I think once you go through that, we had actually, this year when we just got done with the budget last month, probably the most, or should I say the least decisive conversations when it finally got to the final decision-making process, because everyone had been so plugged in to the whole process that they knew exactly where they were when we got there.
So one is that, of course, the process of building the budget. Another is to actually live it. And when you do live it, do you see the major deviation from what you anticipated? And if you do indeed see at times, would you, you know, attribute that to poor planning / budgeting? Or is it just the dynamic business environment that we are in?
I building a budget, like you said, and planning a budget, that's probably where the art of it comes into it. There's always plans, and I think everybody tries to make the best plans possible. Currently here in the city and county, we plan year over year. It's a one-year budget. We're moving towards a two-year budget. I think the nexus between planning and living the budget, though, comes down to you can't always anticipate the things that are going to happen during a year. So you might have a disaster, or you might have some large federal law passed, or you might have something happen after the budget's been passed. In private sector, when I've worked in private sector, you have somewhat more flexibility to react to external forces to adjust to those types of things. The weakness in how we budget and plan in government is we are very down to the penny. Okay, we're going to spend a dollar here, $2 there. We're very, at the end of the day, through our budget process, we're very specific about exactly where our funds are going to be spent. So in living it, when something comes along that you hadn't anticipated, you couldn't see on the horizon, affects you during the middle of a budget year when there is no money left, it's all been allocated. I think then really the challenge is how do you have that honest conversation about, okay, we said we were going to do these things, but because of some change that happened that we didn't see coming or some impact on us, we're going to have to only do three of the five and reallocate funds here. And that's always disconcerting because I think everyone goes through the budget process saying, okay, we'll come back in a year and there'll be these five things done. And it just doesn't always turn out that way. And I think, again, the important part of that is you have to continue to have the conversation throughout the year about the budget. You know, the budget used to be a let's talk about it once a year for a month or two and then forget about it. In my mind, when we get done with a budget, I take about a month off and then we're right back into talking about next year's budget again because it's become almost a year-round cycle about what money did we get, how are we spending it, what's our plans for next year. It's really a continuous process at this point.
So with company budgets, and of course every company does it, and specific to IT spend, the common denominator looks like that most of it is allocated, pre-allocated to the IT operations, and you got very little money for innovation and projects and almost nothing. In fact, in the past show, we discussed about play money. And in most CIOs, in one voice said, I do not have play money to basically try new things. Until the time I try new things, how do you expect me to help innovate? What's the situation which you see in of course, you know, in your organization as well as what you heard in your peer group?
Yeah, that is the common theme. When I think about it and I reflect back, at least in my view, on how IT came about in government, at least, in government, you had over the hundreds of years that the government, local governments have evolved in the U.S. When the government started, IT obviously wasn't a service that was provided. And so most government organizational structures and budgets are built around traditional governmental models. You know, every government can relate to police departments and fire departments and public works departments and street departments and things like that. What has happened, of course, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s with the emergence of technology, that became oftentimes initially centralized and then with distributed computing pushed out to the departments. The weakness of that from a budgetary standpoint is that IT being buried in departments' budgets individually was often viewed as an expense, like paper and paper clips and things like that. So IT was funded as an expense and not really a strategic investment. The downfall of that approach, and when we talk about the 80-20 rule on most of the funds, and some organizations I talk to now with budget cuts, you know, it's probably more of a 90-10 rule. What's happened is they've built this entire infrastructure internally, and similar to building roads, the example I always use when I talk to the policymakers in the city is IT, in my mind, is no different than a building department or a public works department in the sense that we're building infrastructure. We're installing fiber optics, we're installing phone systems, we're installing computer systems, we're building data centers. And because that was an expense, no one acknowledged at the top line. It wasn't individual top line budgetary items. It was buried in the expense accounts of departments. There was a lack of understanding of when the bill was going to become due on replacing a lot of that infrastructure, the increasing cost of maintenance of an aging infrastructure. And so we had less and less money. I think IT initially, probably in the early days of IT when we all started out, was all about innovation. Every time you bought a new computer, that was an innovative thing. You got a new computer, everyone was excited to see that new computer come in. The first time you installed an application everybody could use, that was innovation. But what happened over time was we ended up spending more and more of our time and more of our money maintaining what we had already bought. And so it's created this huge need in government organizations to continue to invest in supporting and maintaining the old systems. And because our budgets are finite, because we don't generate our own revenue in IT and government, we have less and less of that money to spend on new things. So you really have to find a way to break out of that, that downward spiral of all the money you have goes towards maintaining the old. You have to find a way knowing that you're not going to get new money to reduce your operational costs and reallocate some of those funds to new and innovative things to continue to move the organization forward.
So one is to find the money. Another is to make use of the increase, if at all you get one, from 1 year to another, even at an inflation rate, if you get an increase in your budget. Still, the lion's share of that goes into the operational side. Now, it's up to us as IT leaders to you can very well not stay transparent with respect to that increase and say, okay, I'm going to use it. I'm going to deliver the value that you need. You shave off internally wherever you can from the operational budget, put that into the new projects and make IT really deliver value. Because if you keep burning the candle on both ends, you do not have money for projects and your operational expenses are going to increase. And because you're not creating as much value, because there is no innovation, your executive management loses faith and or does not see that you deserve more money. It's like a vicious cycle, and CIO and the crew is the one which is going to be left holding the bag.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me address that maybe in two different ways and give you some examples of how we've tried to solve that challenge here in San Francisco. One is, like we talked about earlier, it can't be IT versus other departments. You know, you can't always be in a posture of trying to defend your budget or fight with other departments for the few scraps that are left over of money at the end of every budget year. So one of the things we've done to try to build support for this idea of understanding IT, recognizing the value of IT to the entire organization, giving support to invest in new technologies, is we've created a governance council in the city and county that's consisting of the CIO, 11 department heads from each department around the city, including their CFOs, the budget officer for the city and county, the mayor, and the president of the Board of Supervisors. And we spend, prior to even starting the budget talks, we probably spend several months in open public meetings with this group talking about citywide what the IT spend is, how much of that spend is operational expenses, what the proposals are for new projects for these innovative ideas. And not surprisingly, the lion's share that we can show financially is going to operational support. But it starts to educate, again, the policymakers and the budgetary decision makers about, we have this huge demand for new innovative ideas. We have all these ideas on how to make government better, how to deliver services better through innovative and new technologies, but there's a cost to that. And so there's millions and millions of dollars that are an unfunded need. But then they start to get a sense through this process of how we could make government better, how investing in technology is good. And then they become engaged in the conversation of, is new money available? Are there grant funds available? Are there some other types of revenue sources we can tap into to pay for some of those new innovative ideas? And they also become very engaged in the operational cost discussion and how to reduce those operational costs. And frankly, when you reduce operational costs, I've never seen that we ever get 100% of the money back. It's usually an agreement that if I save a dollar, 70 cents will go back to closing the deficit in the city general fund deficit. I might get 10 or 15 cents out of every dollar I save back to reinvest, but I still consider that a worthwhile endeavor. If you have a minute, one of the examples of this for us at least was, we had a data center down the street from our office that we had put in place back in the 80s. It was aging infrastructure, and we knew that we needed significant investments, tens of millions of dollars, to improve this data center. And we had this conversation for several years, and we were initially going through the traditional government process of, we have a failing data center, please give us $15 million. We have a failing data center, okay, we'll take $10 million. We have a failing data center, please give us $9 million. So we were going through the traditional process of just asking for money, knowing full well in the budget situation we're in that the money didn't exist. And I think everyone was frustrated because we knew, as IT professionals, we needed to have a good data center, and we needed to, at the same time, find a way to save money and invest in this data center. So we had to do something that traditionally in San Francisco we wouldn't have done. We abandoned our city-owned data center and went to a co-location site. And that was, for us, believe it or not, a transformational step to give up something that we'd done traditionally and stop asking for money and go to an entirely new business model to save money.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages. And look at the IT portfolio management and IT asset management, which look like the killer duo that would enable an organization's budget for IT effectively and even control the related spending. But it seems like that we do not have a good handle on these two areas, actually both of these areas for the most part. At least that's what we hear in the marketplace. Until that time, we will be looking at research reports or other form of primary or secondary sources to validate our respective budgeting and spending techniques. What can be done better in this area so that we have a better handle on what we are supposed to be spending on? And then when we do get the money, can we creatively allocate it so that every time, every budget becomes an opportunity versus a hole that you have to fill, but only it's not going to be filled this time enough, and we will go to the next year, and again, we'll have the same problem. Let's discuss this more when we come back. Please stay tuned. Please stay tuned. Bye.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile and connected. To compete, you want data center flexibility so you can adapt quickly to changing business needs while keeping information safe. Introducing Enterprise Cloud Compute Services, HP's solution for managing secure servers, storage, and networks, delivered as a service. Pay only for what you need. Create order out of chaos. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Start shaping your cloud at HP.com.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile, connected, and fluid. Competing in this world takes a special kind of workplace technology that adapts to change, that allows seamless and personalized interaction. Introducing Workplace 360, HP's full lifecycle desktop management solution, delivered as a service. User subscriptions allow you to gain financial control and flexibility. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Visit HP.com for answers.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gal.
Welcome back. So the question here is the IT portfolio management and IT asset management. That's the very these are the two specific areas where you would go to get a handle on what do you truly need to do and what do you truly need to maintain. And it seems like both of these areas are kind of gray for most companies, and even the leaders are always looking at what can I do better, how can I play the venture capitalist, if you will, or an investment banker, and make sure I allocate things right. And if you do not have enough hold in these two areas, then we keep going to research organizations and try to get other form of sources. So is this the best we can do?
I would agree that asset management, portfolio management is one of the keys to a successful IT budget discussion. When we talk about building credibility, having a dialogue about how we spend our money, I know oftentimes, and I know when I came to San Francisco 3 years ago, there was truly a lack of understanding of where dollars were spent. And we had to go through a very painful process there was an intuitive sense that we were spending a lot of money on IT in the city and county, and there was frustration that we weren't getting our money's worth, if you want to put it that way. Out of those dollars spent, people didn't see the innovation, the new things, and we had to implement both a portfolio management system for our project so that when people received money for a project, that there was a level of accountability and follow through that people could track and say, if I gave you $1 million to do this project, I can see that you did it, it got done, and the results that you said would happen happened. Similarly, we've had to really spend a lot of time around our discussing around our assets and our contracts related to the maintenance of our assets, because again, because it was buried as an expense, I think it had surprised a lot of the organization as to how much money we truly were spending on maintaining old infrastructure through maintenance contracts, through break fixes, and because we didn't have a citywide view at one time about what that total cost was, it had simply snuck up on us. And until we started really implementing some of these controls and understanding, do we need another server? What is the replacement cycle for PCs? I think budget processes are, when we talk about art and science, I think the art of it is having a compelling story to tell about we really need this new thing or we need to reduce cost over here and be able to connect with the business users and policymakers. But the science of it is, as good as your story is, as compelling as a story you might have, you're competing in the IT world and government with other very important things. You know, if you want a dollar, there's probably a library that needs that dollar as well, or a community center, or a hospital, or a police station. And so as compelling as your story is, I would argue that it's going to be hard for an IT professional ever to have a more compelling story than putting a police officer on the street, perhaps. But it's also what we talked about is data-driven. And if you have good data where you show if you give me a dollar to change something, I can give you $2 back, that data part of it, the analytical part of it, that's a key piece of the puzzle. IT professionals need to get comfortable with and accept the fact that we need to be able to account for every penny of where we're spending our dollars and be able to match our compelling stories about why we want to do things differently with good data to back it up.
Now, if you were to really look at the collaborative budgeting process, one is that we do our internal number crunching, we take it to the finance department and or other folks who are decision makers, and then they take a fresh pair of eyes and look at, into it, slice and dice it with, I would not say 100% trust, but perhaps with a healthy skepticism. And then that could result in certain important pieces which might get cut. And here what we are trying to essentially say is that the things which you need to do to create value, they have a chance to get cut down versus if you started that whole process where we said, what do you need to take your organization to the next level, may it be a government or a private sector organization. And then from there, the budget is truly built and not a tennis match between the final executive management or constituents or policymakers as an IT leader. Then do you not think that you will be much better off at the end result level?
Well, two things about that. One, I would say if you're building a budget internally in government and then taking it to someone else to be assessed, I think you're right. That's the traditional way of how we've done it in government, that we would, in our central IT department, we would build a budget, we'd come up with these plans, and then we would lob it over to the budget office or the board of supervisors, the mayor's office, and say, look at this great plan. And again, they would weigh it against all their other priorities. And you're right, it would be cut. And sometimes it's only a little and sometimes a lot. And then we would feel frustrated that we couldn't realize this vision that we had painted. The thing we've changed now in our government is we don't do that anymore. We don't build an internal budget by ourselves. We spend months working directly with the mayor's office and the budget office, the finance office, the chief CFO for the city and county, building our budget in a very open process where we say, here's exactly where we're spending our money. Here's the changes we want to make to our budget. Here's the investments we want to make and the reductions we want to make. So when we get to the end of that dialogue, there is no education that has to occur. The education has happened all the way along so that they're not, they still need to be critical. They still need to make decisions about, are we going to get everything we ask for, implement all of our plans? But it starts from a basis of their understanding and trust that they understand exactly how our budget is built and where the trade-offs are. Again, the historic way we've done it, at least in the city that we've had to change, is we used to sell what I call package deals. You know, please give me $100 million so I can do these 20 things. And when they said, well, we don't have that much money, we'll give you X, we'll cut it, right? We talk about how that you never usually get all you ask for. We would, in frustration, throw our hands in the air and say, well, either you're going to give me all of it, or I can't articulate back to you what that reduction means in terms of a reduction in our proposal. So we build very modular budgets now. We might have 10 projects, but each of them has a line item. We're very clear about which ones are interrelated and which ones can stand alone. And I refer to it as an a la carte menu. The board, the policymakers, the chief financial officer for the city, if they have to make reductions in our proposals about what we want to do, they can very easily, in a sense, line item veto items on there and understand, okay, then this isn't going to happen. We'll defer that a year. We're going to have to change the whole idea there. But instead of it being a package deal, take it or leave it, and if you don't take all of it, I'm going to become frustrated and walk away from the table, and everyone's going to feel like a loser. I think we have a much better process now where people have a better understanding of what our budget looks like and how we can adjust our budget, you know, through the budget process.
Now, you used the word reduction a couple of times as you were describing how this process works. And you know, of course, you are not alone, and this is a common theme, if you will, when it comes to getting money for IT. And knowing that IT has been, at least traditionally and even lately, got the opportunity to make a strategic difference, the eyes and the sharp pencils that come, eyes looking for where can I reduce or shave off some money from IT, and pencils, sharp pencils, which come to say, how can I remove a line item? Are they doing the best justice to what IT could have delivered back? Do you think this is directly attributing to how IT leader has handled the relationship so that they do not take the budget and then get all the main items which actually could help strategically make a difference to that business or that organization are not struck off right off the bat?
Yeah, I think being dreamers, idealists as we are in IT a lot of times in our organizations, I see the entire budget. We're a highly, it's probably another part of the conversation, we're a highly decentralized organization. So in city government here, we're approximately 50 departments, 23,000 employees. And though I'm the central CIO and have a central IT department, it's very decentralized here in the city. My budget, for example, is less than 30% of the total IT spend citywide. Many other departments have their own IT managers, their own IT staff, their own IT budgets embedded in their own departments. And so one of the things that I've noticed is to be a successful leader in IT, one is those partnerships we talked about. It's in the past, there was a competition between the central IT department and other departments for funding, and we all know the economy, worldwide and U.S. economy, is not as healthy and robust as we've seen in past years, so we're all faced with budget deficits. So when you see those cuts, I think you have to have been proactive all year long in as an executive, as a CIO, C-level executive, building those relationships with the other departments. We talked right before the break about our data center. One of the other things we did, instead of the central IT department continuing to invest in building infrastructure, we actually have one of our partner departments who has its own revenue sources, isn't dependent on taxpayer dollars to invest in IT things. We actually partnered with them where they're making the upfront investment in some significant infrastructure improvements for the entire city, and then we're going to pay them back over a 20-year period. So I think those relationships and being able to connect with the C-level executives across the organization are critical to getting significant budget things move forward.
Now, with respect to the new paradigms, may it be cloud, may it be shared services, another form where you are hoping to create transparency on what is the money being spent on. Because, you know, anytime when we are not clear about something, it introduces doubt and people think, oh, there's way too much money being spent, which I'm not privy to. So that transparency that you can bring, one is to, of course, build a relationship and trust. But more importantly, do you think this new computing paradigm is actually going to help you to say, okay, I will tell you exactly per user basis how much are we spending? And then, yeah, and you know, yeah, you're right. So once we tell them that, and on the operational side, we're able to take care of that more transparently, and then perhaps you will then be bestowed with another stash which you can put towards projects. Or do you think that's still dreaming? But you know what? Hold your thought. Hold your thought. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
We live in an instant on world, mobile, connected, and fluid. Competing in this world takes a special kind of workplace technology that adapts to change, that allows seamless and personalized interaction. Introducing Workplace 360, HP's full lifecycle desktop management solution delivered as a service. User subscriptions allow you to gain financial control and flexibility. The Instant On Enterprise is here. Are you ready? Visit HP.com for answers.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile and connected. To compete, you want data center flexibility so you can adapt quickly to changing business needs while keeping information safe. Introducing Enterprise Cloud Compute Services, HP's solution for managing secure servers, storage, and networks, delivered as a service. Pay only for what you need. Create order out of chaos. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Start shaping your cloud at HP.com.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So, John, take it away with what we just discussed.
So cloud computing, one of my passions, and I just have to talk about it for a minute because you mentioned it before we went to break, and I do think it's significant to government right now. And I have a lot of friends still in the private sector. We talk about it a lot. But government is oftentimes a slow adopter of technologies and initiatives, and this is one. Every time I go to a government conference or I talk, give speeches, we always talk about cloud computing, and should I always hear, should government rush into this idea? Well, first of all, I don't think cloud computing is all that new of an idea. I think it's been rebranded. It's being sold better now, and I think it's actually being delivered better now than it was previously. But I think we would all, as IT professionals, say cloud computing isn't that innovative an idea. Perhaps the shared cloud model is, and the thin client shared cloud model is now a more proven technology that we're all, as IT professionals, more comfortable adopting. But I argue it comes from the consumer side when you see where Google went with Gmail and a lot of other technologies that the consumers adopted at first to help prove out the model. Now companies and governments are able to adopt it. But it really is, cloud computing to me really is about the economics, the bottom line economics. So we talk about the art and the science. I mean, the science part of cloud computing is bottom line. I have not seen, and I've spent a lot of time on with my staff and talking to other organizations, any way that I can more cost-effectively deliver certain services internally, running my own infrastructure, it's from a pure cost standpoint. I can't build the infrastructure, maintain the infrastructure, have a redundant infrastructure for disasters, then adopting a shared cloud infrastructure model for certain things, because it's just dollars and cents. It's going to cost me 3 to 4 times as much to build my own infrastructure. So a year ago, when we were having a budget discussion in the city, there was that common sense conversation we had at a budget meeting where someone said, gosh, we have 7 emails in the system. From a common sense standpoint, does that make sense? Of course, everyone shook their head and said, no, why would you have 7 email systems? There's no benefit, common sense benefit to a city having 7 separate email systems. There's just no logic to it. But then, you know, once you get past the emotional common sense discussion, then you really get into the dollars and cents. What does it really cost us, bottom line, to buy our own email servers, to maintain those servers, to staff those servers, to back those servers up, to have a DR plan for each of those servers? And you look at models like Gmail or the exchange, hosted exchange models. You can't compete with that. Now, there's in government, there's security, there's privacy, there's confidentiality things, all those things you need to address, and you can address contractually with those vendors. But from a pure dollars and cents standpoint, bottom line is you have to seriously consider that model. And when you talk about saving money and making improvements at the same time, I'm taking 16,000 users off an old thick client Lotus Notes solution that no one liked. Now, personally, I think Lotus Notes ran fine. We ran it here for years. It was rock solid. It delivered us good, but it was expensive, and my users didn't like it. I can tell you, I've never had an easier project in my life. When my staff go out now and get people on hosted exchange, my customers are ecstatic. I'm saving the city money. And I'm building this relationship with my customers now where they're like, gosh, look, how are you guys able to do this? You're giving me this great product. I love it. We're years behind. I've got all these great tools now. How are you guys able to do this and at the same time be meeting your budget reduction goals? And it's really satisfying to, I know my staff and a lot of the executives in the city, to actually be able to do a project that has such a good feeling about it, where we're making things better for the users and they're really happy about it, and at the same time be able to simultaneously meet our budget reduction goals, which I think is, you know, it's rare to find those projects, but when you do, I think you have to celebrate them.
Now, with that said, now do you think when you get the CFO or whosoever is basically involved in it, do you think they are ready to collaborate with you to make sure that while you bring these new technologies and then you explain to them what are the new other projects that you want to do, do they give you a blind ear or they actually listen and then look at the line item versus tracking them off first and then say, okay, tell me, why should I add it back?
I think they actually listen now. I think the good thing is I think technology and technology initiatives have been around long enough now that you're always going to have to compete. You're always going to have to compete as an IT professional with other priorities in the organization. Like I said, it's, you know, oftentimes it's oversimplified and people say, well, how can an IT project compete with a library project? Everybody wants a new library in their neighborhood. But, you know, if it's $1 million for a library or $1 million for a new ERP system, which do you think they're going to pick? And I understand that. The thing you're able to do, though, if you build a good governance structure and you get people participating in that conversation early, is what we've been able to do is segment or break out the portions of our budget proposals that relate, again, to the business partners we support. So we can now say, for a library project, 1% of that library cost is the technology that costs that go into it, the computers that people can use, the free Wi-Fi in the libraries, the card catalogs, the automatic book return systems. And so there's an understanding now that by aligning IT with our partner departments and by being able to articulate the technology that's required for every staff person we add in the city, if there's a IT cost for projects, for common projects, for a building, we're able to articulate the infrastructure, IT infrastructure costs for those building projects. So rather than, again, me coming up with a number that I have to defend against all these other priorities, I can now show the relationship between my proposals and other projects in the city. Because nobody wants to build the library and the day it opens have no alarms, have no telephones, have no computers, have no card catalog system. And so they can see now that if we approve this, there's a related cost that needs to be invested in on the IT side. And I think that's a really important thing to continue to have IT professionals do, is be able to relate their projects and can connect their projects to things that people recognize better and appreciate.
Now, if I were to take a private sector example, perhaps you also have similar situations where business leaders or unit leaders or departments in your case might have their specific needs, and which they may have expressed in multiple ways over the years to the IT leader. But when they sit and do the budgeting, perhaps they look at every one altogether and say where IT has to deliver. And that's where, even though the budget may be created and then which is reviewed by CFO, the end result could very well be that the business line leaders who this budget was essentially created for might not get their needs met. So what if, this could be an extreme measure or an approach, what if IT comes totally out of the budgeting process and be more of a spectator and more of a validator and let the business line leaders and or those department leaders build budget for their respective IT needs and give it to CFO? Don't you think that would get us a better end result or end product?
It might. I have another idea that we've tried here that I would throw out for consideration. Let me give you an example of one of the budget reduction approaches we took here. It had a twofold effect. One is we used to try to, like many traditional central IT departments, we used to try to control all of certain types of business line. We used to say if you wanted X done, you had to come to us for it. So it was a sort of that centralized control model. And we still do that in some areas for security reasons and things like that. But there were a lot of areas we didn't feel like that was necessary. So we used to have a line of business, application development, and we used to tell all the departments in the city, if you want an application developed, you have to come to us. And so, like you said, sometimes we would get some money. We were never able to meet the demand. We had a lot of unhappy customers because there was always this huge backlog of work. And not only were we behind in our work, but we didn't have enough funds, to, even if we could have brought in enough staff to ever achieve all we wanted. So we did two things. One is we took all the centralized application development support staff, and we put them out in the owner departments. We said, three go here, four go there. We sent them all out to their business partners, and they became employees of those departments so that they would sit next to the business owners and be able to develop applications out there. Now, I would argue that the distributed application development model is perhaps somewhat weaker, but there was an instant level of recognition of now they own those resources. They could see what the resource limitations were, and those departments became invested in allocating more of those funds to support the application development business. Now, the downside of that was there simply weren't enough people to go around, and so there were a lot of departments that had no application development ability. So they couldn't come to us anymore, and they couldn't really go beg another department for help to develop their applications. And what we did there is we kept a core number of staff. We started this initiative called crowdsourcing hackathons, where we actually, the few staff I have left that focus on this area, go out and meet with the department, identify application needs, and then bring in the public, volunteers, IT professionals. We do weekend camps, and actually the community is now developing apps for us because it's of benefit to them. These applications, they're doing it with open source at no cost to the city, and we've developed over 80 applications in the last 2 years at no cost to the city using open source software that directly benefits the public without controlling that process.
Now, as part of this whole 80-20 rule that has been happening, if you were to go back to the policymakers and or, you know, private sector goes to the respective executive management, do you think if you were to ask them what are their top priorities and projects, not geek projects or IT projects, what are their business projects, and why don't you invest in those instead of looking at that translating into an IT project? You are better off, or you're going to be better off with respect to getting money for the actual projects versus just operational stuff?
Absolutely. When I talk to the policymakers and decision makers, I mean, to be honest, they're not terribly interested in my operational challenges. They're very interested in, you know, creating free open source applications for reporting crimes or customer service interfaces. They're very interested in free Wi-Fi for the public, in increasing broadband accessibility to people around the city. So when I talk to the policymakers, I really talk about the things that they see the direct benefit for and they can relate to. I think we've developed a level of trust where they trust that I will continue to look for ways to save money on the operational side to find ways to invest in these ideas. I think the dialogue is you have to excite people about the opportunities technology can bring, and they have to have a level of trust and confidence that you as a CIO, that you as a C-level executive, can find ways to solve that problem without continually only talking about the operational costs and challenges. They're going to trust. They have to trust you that you're going to solve the operational problem to move innovation forward.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. And, John, let's inventory the top priorities, irrespective of whether you're a government sector or a private sector organization. What are the top priorities for any organization which they also have as an expectation for IT to deliver on? And how are they also, besides having high expectations, are also putting money on it? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Live in an instant-on world, mobile and connected. To compete, you want data center flexibility so you can adapt quickly to changing business needs while keeping information safe. Introducing Enterprise Cloud Compute Services, HP's solution for managing secure servers, storage, and networks, delivered as a service. Pay only for what you need. Create order out of chaos. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Start shaping your cloud at HP.com.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile, connected, and fluid. Competing in this world takes a special kind of workplace technology that adapts to change, that allows seamless and personalized interaction. Introducing Workplace 360, HP's full lifecycle desktop management solution, delivered as a service. User subscriptions allow you to gain financial control and flexibility. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Visit HP.com for answers.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
All right, welcome back. So let's quickly inventory, John, the different priorities that you think would turn out to be the top priorities for the executive management and business line leaders. If you did go to them and say, okay, I would like to allocate more funds towards such projects and innovation, which is going to get you value. Do you see a theme, because you've lived both sides, private and government sector, specific type of projects?
I do. I would say the themes I hear most often when I'm pitching ideas or things, I try to keep two things in mind. It's been hard for me to let go of a lot of things that, as an IT professional, I feel passionate about, because what I've come to realize is a lot of the things I feel really passionate about that I think are priorities, I've had to come to realize that they assume when I go in to have the conversation that I've already figured out the solution to all those. And so for me, security, for example, is a huge passion of mine that I'm very passionate about and believe that we need to spend a lot of time and effort on in IT and government. And though it's a passion of mine, I have to say, when I talk to people about it, it's usually, yeah, we agree, but we assume you've already figured all that out. So we assume every idea you pitch or all these thoughts you have, you've already solved the security problem. And so the things I've learned that I see as a priority for our decision makers and things is, one is a huge theme for us here in San Francisco, that spans a lot of projects. Is I group under what I call the accessibility thing, is there's a lot of excitement about how do we get our citizens more connected with government services. That's why we're doing expanding our fiber. That's why we're doing free Wi-Fi. That's why we're putting more and more applications on the Internet. That's why we're streaming, podcasting, all of our public meetings and things like that. There's this whole theme in our government right now about how does what you're proposing directly connect, make government more accessible to the public, to the citizens, to the visitors, and how are you addressing the accessibility? Because that's what they want to see IT used for in the city, is connecting people instantly through their smartphones, through their computers, through their TVs. We want our own TV station connecting citizens to government. And then the other theme that is always balanced about accessibility, because you know, if you gave me tens of millions of dollars, I would make us the most, you know, wildly mobile, accessible city in the world. But I also have to always keep in mind that there's still also that legacy view that IT is this luxury. It's this expense that you spend money on when all the other important things are done. And even though we've built these good partnerships, I always have to remind myself when we have those conversations, when you talk about priorities, when I'm pitching ideas or talking about initiatives, that there's always this underlying conversation that's being had about what's the value of the project? What's the efficiencies that are gained in government by doing these things? So when I talk about new software packages to manage RFPs and contracts, the software itself and the concept isn't appealing to them. Is it makes it more efficient because we'll have half as many contracts, and every contract we manage in the city has an internal cost to do it. So it's a whole efficiency conversation, how IT contributes to efficiency and value of the organization, and then the human connection. How does it make technology, resources, education more accessible to the public? Those are the two main themes, I think, that resonate the most with people here in the city right now.
One last question, very quickly. If you were to go out and ask this question straight out, we need to, and I want to, change the 80-20 rule with respect to IT budget allocation, what do you expect as the answer?
I would think the answer would be absolutely. I think they would say to me, that's exactly what we expect you to do. The expectation for us right now when we go through budget reductions, in the last 3 years, we've had to reduce our budget between 10 and 20%, our base budget every year over the last 3 years. And when I make those reductions, there is absolutely an assumption that the reductions I'm going to make directly come out of that 80%, that the 20 is not going to shrink. There's actually pretty clear direction that I need to grow that 20, and any reduction I need to make, any savings I need to achieve, need to come out of the 80. And we've had very frank conversations with vendors, with partners about that 80% of how we're expending funds today. We're going to take the savings we need to give back to balance the budget out of that 80, and we're going to continue to find every new dollar we invest is going to be in that 20% to move things forward.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, thank you so much, John. It looks like that rethinking of the 80-20 rule looks, basically we should be doing it, and the business expects us to do it. Sometimes the how part is the one that is missing. And your comments were very pertinent in terms of how organizations can rely on CIOs and the IT leaders to deliver IT, but at the same time, in order to get the budgets that we need, CIOs need to get the trust of those executive management and organizational leaders. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
If you have any questions, listeners, please send us to views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
For tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog All next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.
CIO Talk Radio is brought to you by Citrix, offering GoToAssist, remote support made easy.